could you comment on just the conditions in Palestine, and what does it mean to honor a Canadian ambassador to Israel from a Palestinian human rights perspective?
Well, thank you, David, actually, for asking these questions. On the one hand, I want to say that the question that you're asking is quite complex to comment on, and I can't give justice to what happens in Palestine. So what I would do before answering is to actually refer to some work which has been done beyond the international human rights community. There's a lot of work done by Palestinian organizations, including Al Shabaka. I can share with you their reports on apartheid, Al Haq, Al Damir on Palestinian prisoners. So all of these Palestinian human rights organizations have actually labeled this and deemed it as apartheid even before the international community have done so. And this is all the international community joining the voices of the Palestinian community and human rights community is very important, because it's changing in the first place, the terms of the conversation revolving around the question of Palestine, which has always been depicted as a conflict, right? Something that we can't understand. Whereas here, we're understanding this as a form of settler colonialism, just the ways in which Canada is a settler colonial state, which actually represses indigenous nations, dispossesses them from their land. So the question of land back for Palestinians is the crucial issue, just the ways in which land back is crucial for indigenous nations and communities in Canada. And the other dimension is apartheid, right? So the situation of life in Palestine, again, I can't do justice, but it is very important to understand that Palestinians, there are huge numbers abroad, right? So like there's a huge community abroad, and then there are Palestinians in historic Palestine. And in historic Palestine, Palestinians are divided in terms of their conditions. So people live in the Gaza Strip, in the West Bank, and in the State of Israel. So for your listeners to understand, on the one hand, Palestinians live under settler colonialism. And here it's worth it, I think, to say that just the ways in which Patrick Wolf has written about settler colonialism, that settler colonialism is not an event. Settler colonialism is a process of dispossession, of uprooting people. And so it unfolds up until this day, right? For the history part, I can also link this material to you, like I can send you the material that I have in mind. But there are books, for example, by Walid Khalidi, by Rashid Khalidi, both Palestinian historians, Benny Morris, Ilan Pape. But the current situation of settler colonialism persists until this day. The other side of it is that this is also an apartheid regime. So on the one hand, you have a settler colonial state and an apartheid regime which discriminates racially against Palestinians. So, for example, in the Gaza Strip that I mentioned, since 2005, since Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip, Gaza has been constantly being bombed by the military, by the Israeli military. So 2008, you had Operation Cast Lead. 2012, you had Operation Pillar of Defense. 2014, you had Operation Protective Edge for 50 days. And in 2021, you had another operation on Gaza. So the military, which is supported by the Canadian Liberal government and by the honorary degree recipient here, is responsible for attacking schools in Gaza, for attacking houses, for demolishing infrastructure, etc. So if you are a child born in the Gaza Strip in 2008, means that you've seen four wars already, right? This is bombing Gaza to the Stone Age every time. There is a documentary by Max Blumenthal and Dan Cohane, it's called Killing Gaza. It's available online. It's very, very hard to watch, but this is the reality in Gaza, right? So I invite people, I mean, if they want to know more about the reality there of the military campaigns on Gaza, today we are May 2nd, Israel bombed Gaza. Like, this is ongoing. It never stops. Yes.
And so it just goes to show that this would be very jarring for someone to, for someone who is aware of these day-to-day conditions, to see the ambassador to be honored this way, must seem quite jarring to an observer. Krista, did you want to add something as well?
I mean, I guess in addition to the context that Lara's provided, I would say that, you know, this person is not just any ambassador to Israel. She is an ambassador who used that position in particular to bolster Israel's settler colonial policies, including recruiting Canadian citizens to join the Israeli military. So she wasn't kind of a bystander to the project of settler colonialism and of kind of the attacks on Palestinians. She was absolutely promoting and expanding that work. And I think that's an insult to folks at Mount Allison. I think it definitely is what undermines her candidacy for an honorary degree. And it undermines Mount A's stated commitments to equity, to justice, to decolonization, and to indigenization.
And just wondering if you could, maybe we could address the criticism of the, you know, that the petition perhaps confuses the relationship between state policy and the person of the ambassador, Deborah Lyons, who is never really authorized to do anything or say anything that isn't really sanctioned by Ottawa, according to, you know, some commenters I've seen online. Maybe I could get your response. Is the issue with the diplomat, or rather the foreign policy of Canada, or does that distinction matter?
I just want to add something to the previous question, actually. So I just talked about the Gaza Strip, but the Israeli military is also exerting all forms of oppression and dispossession on the West Bank and also on Palestinians living inside Israel. So it's a military rule, right? So people have to cross more than 98 fixed checkpoints, and you have many other flying checkpoints, which means that your daily encounter is militarized, right? And so you're dispossessed, you're removed from your homes. There are settlers who come in, right? There are more than 25,000 homes that have been demolished between 67 and 2012, and this is the work of the Israeli military. So again, we're looping again to the agent of repression and of dispossession and of apartheid and settler colonialism in Palestine, and we're Mrs. Lyons has supported this military, right? So like, this is not a detail, it's very important. I think, so concerning your question, I think it's irrespective of these governments, whether they're conservative or liberal, they have been consistent in terms of supporting Israeli apartheid and settler colonialism. The relationship between Canada and Israel is so deep. It's ideological, it's political, it's economic, it's diplomatic. And it's very ironic that this is underestimated both in literature and media coverage. It's always the United States which is depicted as the biggest supporter, but Canada is a big supporter also of Israel. And here I'm citing some work from Labor for Palestine in Canada, which was shared by my colleague, Sara Kardash, that you know, based on the research and an article by Eve Angler in rabble.ca. So on the one hand, Ottawa supports economic and trade assistance to Israel's illegal settlements. Contrary to the CRA guidelines, which prohibit supporting other countries' militaries, Canada is turning a blind eye to some organization channeling funds to the Israeli military. Canada pulled out of the World Conference Against Racism because previous conferences equated Zionism with racism. The Trudeau government told the International Criminal Court of Justice not to investigate Israeli war crimes and threatened to end funding. The federal government spends hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars on lawyers to prevent the proper labeling of wines coming from illegal settlements. And so people, consumers, wouldn't know whether what they're consuming is actually a violation of international law or not. And then a series of, or what is called the Memorandum of Understanding on the Canada-Israel Strategic Partnership, which was signed by both countries, pledging to deepen the relationship and cooperation in areas such as border defense, counterterrorism, public safety, and trade. And Canada has adopted actually the very controversial IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is criminalizing any form of critique to the Israeli state and its human rights violations, and labeling all pro-Palestinian voices as being anti-Semitic. And this is very controversial because even among the Jewish community, so Independent Jewish Voices for Peace, etc., all of these, this community has stood also against the IHRA definition. But here again, Canada is so complicit under the Liberal government in terms of supporting this. So I think it is important to keep this in mind. Yeah.
The ambassador has held celebrations at the Canadian embassy in Tel Aviv for these lone soldiers who, as your petition notes, enlist in the IDF and you know, presumably go to war. This it seems obvious that I don't know if there are examples of this that you're aware of, but that if one were to go and take up arms with, say, the Palestinian Authority, you know, not to mention any these groups that are listed as terrorist organizations, that those lone soldiers would be prosecuted probably to the fullest extent of law and treated as terrorists, I imagine. Could you comment on this kind of, I don't know, disparity, to quote Judith Butler, you know, whose lives are grievable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. Krista, do you want to?
Well, one example that comes to mind is one that we've cited in the petition, which is that Tariq Loubani is a Canadian doctor, and he traveled to Palestine not as a soldier, but to provide medical relief in the occupied territories. And he was shot twice in the legs. And even though the prime minister at the time did express concerns about that and kind of stepped in to make a public statement, the ambassador did not. So I think this answers both of your questions, right? Both about the double standard, which is that some lives are seen as valuable and grievable and worth protecting and some are not. And also that Lyons's behavior went far beyond what the state, like the actual awful state line was. She took it further than that. Just Peace Advocates and other organizations had led to a large national petition that went through the House of Commons to defend or to encourage adherence to the Canadian Enlistment Act. So in those instances, she went beyond Canadian state policy. She went in violation of Canadian legislation to support recruitment for the Israeli military, while at the same time refusing to defend a Canadian doctor who was there trying to be of medical assistance in what was a crisis situation. So that shows both the double standard and the extent to which she went even beyond Canadian law, which endorses ongoing Israeli settler colonialism.
Laura, I think this is your point that both the Tories and the Liberals have supported this extremely hard line. And it's interesting to note that Lyons, who replaced this Harper appointee as ambassador to Israel, Vivian Berkovici, who has been described, you know, by another Canadian diplomat as a mouthpiece for Netanyahu in one 2016 article in the Globe and Mail, and Radio Canada reported that Berkovici worked for the Israeli intelligence firm Black Cube, which of course denies it, but it seems that, you know, Lyons is regarded as kind of this more moderate choice. And what does this say about this kind of position or this office of the ambassador of Israel?
I mean, I don't know. I didn't see her as moderate at all. And her public opinion is just public, right? So you go to and visit what she's written while she was ambassador, the erasure of Palestinian lives, the complete denial that something is happening here, not one statement that condemns anything that is happening in Palestine, is, I think, very much, and this is what I mentioned early on, is that this rapprochement between Canada and Israel is reflected also in the ways in which she articulated a discourse whereby in one of her speeches, she said, well, Canada and Israel are two democracies and, right, we're so close. But this is actually also an erasure of the plight of Indigenous nations and communities in Canada. It's ignoring that the state that we live in is a settler colonial state. So I don't see in any way that this is a moderate stance. It's very much a colonial speech for me. I'm struck by the fact that nothing exists out there in any of her tweets, given also that while she was there, a massive campaign was conducted against Gaza. Besides the military campaigns, there were civilian protests on the borders, and Palestinians were systematically being shot down. So this is part of the systematic killing that Francesca Albanese mentions, right? The unlawful targeting of civilians, which is part and parcel of the apartheid regime. She never condemned any of this, right? So like, no, I don't think that the depiction of her being moderate is an accurate depiction at all for me.
Just briefly, the case of Afghanistan, she oversaw basically the collapse of the country and its return to Taliban rule. As I noted earlier, she defended this as the only way forward in her farewell statement to the people of Afghanistan, which can be found online. Just wonder if you could respond briefly to that.
I think based on the reading I've done on material coming out of Afghanistan from social movements, including feminist movements like the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan, it's clear that for quite a while, social movements within Afghanistan have known that the Taliban was not the only way forward and that it would be a way toward greater repression of gender equity, but of so many other forms of oppression as well. To suggest that that was the only way forward, I think, is a capitulation. I think it is a very tough pill to swallow for those who live in Afghanistan and for those who are living outside of Afghanistan because they've been displaced by the invasion of Afghanistan. I think it also elides the culpability of the Canadian state, both in the invasion of Afghanistan, the occupation of Afghanistan, the pillaging of Afghanistan. And those are pieces that are also clear in the academic literature. We can send you some more citations if you want more to read. But the literature is quite clear that the occupation, the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan are what made the return to the Taliban inevitable. There could have been a different way forward if feminist organizations, women's organizations, and other members of civil society had been at the table during the negotiations and during discussions, but they were systemically shut out. And the Canadian state is culpable for that. So she's providing, again, a cover for Canadian state imperialism. And it stands at odds with her stated commitments to education for women and girls in Afghanistan. And I think it reveals that she has used her position in both Afghanistan and Israel to forward an imperial project on behalf of the Canadian state, but also going beyond even the stated aims of the Canadian state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like just, I mean, this is also a reminder of the Canadian foreign policy here, something that we discussed with Krista yesterday, that Canada was contributed to the invasion of Afghanistan, right? So like Canada played an instrumental role and tried to uproot the Taliban. And then again, they're giving them back the legitimacy, which is, I mean, right. What else can you label this besides imperialism, right?